Good morning, everybody. Just a question. Does anybody know how many meters above sea level Yerushalayim is? No, I asked the boys in shul this morning. No. If it would be 1100, we would already be blanketed in... maybe you're talking about feet. Yeah? I don't know. Feet. And I was just told that Yerushalayim is 800 meters. And they said above 900, 800, 700, 500. No, it never occurred to me. I don't know, in New York I never tried to find out how many meters we are above sea level. I don't know.
Are you talking
her nose? It is at sea level. Or very deep below sea level. I don't know. That's right. In other words, it may snow in Har Nof and maybe Ramot and not here in the center of town. I believe it's 800 meters, feet, or meters. Huh? All right, I'll just erase the whole first part of this tape until we find out precisely. A meter is about 3 feet, right?
I thought
around 1,100 meters. Listen, we'll check it out. I'll find some book at home that says. As we begin Sefer Shoftim, there's something that I've wanted to do since we began this course, and I'm just going to do it today. And then we'll get into Shoftim, and we're just going to take a few selections. I've said a number of times in the past that as the people of the book, at least we should have a knowledge of the structure of the book. I am afraid that if you would ask people to list the names of the books of the Nevi'im, we would be very hard-pressed to do it. So let's at least get the information down straight once and for all, and we will have a picture of Tanakh before our eyes, and we're going to see a number of very interesting things. And what we're going to talk about is what are the books of Tanakh and who wrote them. That's really most important to us. And there are going to be a number of ancillary ideas that will come through. This is all based on a paragraph in the Talmud in Masechta Bava Batra, and there on that sheet that you have on the right hand side. The Gemara in Bava Batra says the following: Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis learned, Sidron Shel Nevi'im, the order of the books of Nevi'im are Yehoshua and Shoftim, Shmuel and Malachim, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Yeshayahu, Ushneim Asar. Trei Asar, the 12 minor prophets. Sum total, how many books do we have listed in Nevi'im? We have a total of 8. Yehoshua and Shoftim, Shmuel and Malachim, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, Yeshayahu, and Treyasar. That's 8. Now what you have to... This is the order of Nevi'im. What the Gemara hasn't told us, because it was unnecessary to tell us, is the order of Torah. Tanakh is divided into Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim, the writings. Now, Torah are the Chamisha, Chumshei Torah, 5. So it's really 5 plus 8. We're up to 13. Now we come, the Gemara talks about Sidron Shel Ketuvim, the order of the writings. And they are, we're going to see a total of 11. In other words, these, the Ketuvim, are not necessarily prophecy. They are not prophecy, but they are all written beruach hakodesh, with divine inspiration. Rut, Sefer Tehillim, Iyov, Mishlei, Kohelet, Shir Hashirim. Kinot is the term by which the Gemara describes Eicha. Eicha are the kinot, the lamentations. Daniel, Megillat Esther, Ezra, and Divrei Hayam. There are a total of 11. Good. You're already asking one of the correct questions, one of the questions to ask. There is no Sefer Nehemiah. There's only a Sefer Ezra. That is, we, in all of our Tanakhs, we're going to find not only an Ezra, but we will also find a Nehemiah. In addition to that, we're going to find a Shmuel Aleph and a Shmuel Bet, and a Malachim Aleph and a Malachim Bet, and a Divrei Hayamim Aleph and a Divrei Hayamim Bet. So you have to understand that all of these divisions into two Svarim, breaking Shmuel into Malachim into Divrei Hayamim into making Ezra and Nehemiah into two Svarim, is something that comes from non-Jewish sources. It's not from within Judaism, even though we're going to see later that Nehemiah was in a sense a separate sefer, but for certain reasons the name of Nehemiah does not appear on his sefer, but it's all in our sources, it's all referred to as Sefer Ezra. We'll find very often in Talmud a pasuk that is quoted from Nehemiah, and Rashi will tell us the Sefer Ezra, it is written in Ezra. Which means, therefore, there are a total of 24 Kitvei HaKodesh. When we talk about Tanakh, there are 24 books in Tanakh. And if you review this, and I hope that you will know all of the 24 Kitvei HaKodesh. And this is already not trivia, but it's the kind of thing that one should know, and there are enough people that you can ask, list for me the 24 Kitvei HaKodesh. It's tragic that we can't even list it's just plain tragic. I mean, I try it every so often with people, it's an absolute disaster. Trey also counts. I'm trying to make it, you're anticipating my every thought. Trey also, the 12 minor prophets, yes, are all counted as one sefer. Don't bother asking anybody to list the 12 minor prophets. It's worthwhile really, once and for all. You do it once and you remember it for about a week, then you do it again, but at some point if you read through the the only ones that we know, I mean the ones I think that are familiar to all, are obviously two of them in their entirety are Haftarot, Sefer Ovadia, which is one chapter and a total of 21 psukim, which is the Haftorah for Parshat Vayishlach. And then, of course, there is the famous Maftar Yonah, Mincha of Yom Kippur. So the four chapters of Sefer Yonah, which is the entire Sefer, is the Haftorah for Mincha of Yom Kippur. There are two or three Haftorot that come from Malachi, and all of Malachi is three chapters, so most of Malachi appears in Haftarot. I'll tell you, just to make sure, I didn't even look into a Tanakh, but I wrote down, as I remember, they may not even be in order. Hosea.
I was going to ask a question, because
I understand. Very good question. Why is Yeshayahu listed in the Gemara? Why is it listed after Yirmiyahu and Yecheskel? Yeshayahu should have been listed before. Very good question. I see you're thinking today. I mean, you're thinking all the time, but you're thinking, I nearly got myself into trouble. But you're asking a very good question. Why is Yeshayahu listed after Yirmiyahu and Yecheskel? Let's go through the page and we'll see if there's an answer that will emerge as a result of information that we get here. Not the 12. Before we go further, Hosea, Yoel. I don't remember if I have them in order. Hosea, Yoel. Huh? It starts with Hosea.
Hosea, Yoel.
Zachariah Malacha, very good. Where did you go to school? Huh?
Central.
Central. Very good. I may not even have them in as good an order as you have. Hosea, Yoel, Amos, okay. Avadya, Yonah, Micha, Nachum, Habakkuk, Tzfanya, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Okay. And the fact is, from a historic point of view, the order of the Nevi'im in the Treyasar is pretty close to how they appeared chronologically. Hosea was in the time of Yeshayahu, who is one of the first of the Nevi'im. Malachi, which is the end of Treyasar, is really the moment at which prophecy comes to a conclusion. The end of the period of prophecy comes with Malachi, and at the very the last sukkim are Zichru Torat Moshe Avdi, remember the Torah of Moshe, my servant, and then Hini. Hine anochi sholeach lechem et Eliyahu hanavi l'tnei bo yom hagadol v'hanora, behold, I will send you Eliyahu before the coming of the great day. So that Malachi ends prophecy. And then Yonah, Ovadia, all of the rest of them were during the period of Bayit Rishon. Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi, we will see, were part of the Anshe Knesset Agdol, men of the Great Assembly. They returned from Babel, and they were already, in other words, prophecy came to an end after the construction of the second Beit HaMikdash, after the return from Galut Babel. All right. Now the next section, Mi Katzvan, who wrote the Kitvei HaKodesh? Moshe Katav Sifro, what we have over here is the Gemara and Rashi's commentary. Moshe Katav Sifro Parshat Bil'am, the Gemara says. Moshe wrote his Sefer, that is already the five Chamisha Chumshe Torah, and Parshat Bil'am. Now, after the parentheses, we have Iyov. The opinion of the Gemara is one of a number of opinions that Moshe was the one who wrote Sefer Iyov. There's even a great deal of discussion in the Gemara whether there ever was a person called Iyov. There are opinions in the Gemara that say that the entire book of Iyov is Moshe. It's a parable. It's a parable. Then there are opinions there in the Gemara that Iyov lived at the time of Yaakov and Lavan. We certainly have him, according to another Gemara, we have him in the cabinet of Paro. When Paro says, Hava nitchak malal, let us deal wisely with the children of Israel, so there were three members of the cabinet with whom he discussed his plans for the final solution of the Jewish people, of the Jewish question, and they were Bilam, Yitro, and Iyov. Bilam is the one who said, kill the Jews. Iyov is the one who remained silent, and therefore he suffered, and Yitro objected and fled, and therefore he became the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. So there are other opinions that say that Iyov lived at the time of the return of Jews after the exile from Babel. And during those, there was a great deal, Jews suffered a great deal during that period of time, and the Gemara, in a sense, is condemning him that he could have come to the aid and the assistance of Jews. They were a weak community, had returned to Eretz Yisrael. There were all sorts of enemies from within, enemies from without. Yes? I didn't get that, Wendy. What is it? Obviously, according to that, huh? Who? Iyov was not Jewish. No, in a sense that he suffers because he was on the sidelines while Klal Yisrael suffered. According to the opinion that he lived at the time of Yaakov and Lavan, Yaakov suffered at the hands of Lavan. And Iyov was a great man during that period of time, or he could have raised, should have raised his voice against the suffering of Jews in Egypt. Oh, you can't reconcile the opinions. No, no, no. Nobody ever meant to reconcile them. Certainly, if we're going to say that he lived at the time of Bayit Sheni, how do we reconcile that with the opinion that Moshe wrote it? Okay, they don't. They were not meant to be reconciled. There's different. First of all, there's an old Jewish joke. The Gemara says there's an opinion that Iyov lo hoya v'lo nivra. Iyov never existed. He was a character that was created by Moshe or whoever wrote it. In other words, after all of the suffering, after all of Eo's suffering, somebody comes along and says, like, he didn't even exist. No. How cruel can you be? But yes?
I don't quite understand why it says that Moshe contacts him more
partially. That's where we're at. You're anticipating my every...
So obviously.
Yes, so that's why the Rashi, the Rashi on the spot is quoted in the parentheses. Rashi says, Nivuato u'mishalav, the prophecies of Bilam and the parables of Bilam, Apo pi she'inam tzarchei Moshe v'torato, the Seder Ma'asav. Parshat Bilam is a part of Torah that seems not to fit into Torah. Moshe is the great legislator. Moshe is the one who says all sorts of things to Klal Yisrael. Parshat Bilam seems to be like something, a unit all of its own that was written by him and put into Torah. But of course we have to understand, not a word, not a letter was put into Torah by Moshe without the express dictation of God. But Parshat Bilam is singled out as something that is unique in Torah because it's not really part of the rest of Torah. Yes? That's a Chazal that says that that Bilam, there was a prophet such as Bilam, so that the nations of the world should not be able to say that, if you would have given us a prophet like Moshe, look at what we would have accomplished. Then Yehoshua, Katav Sifro, Ushmone Psukim Achronim Sheva Torah. This we said. Yehoshua is the one who wrote the book of Yehoshua, and he is the one who wrote the last 8 Psukim in Torah from Vayomat Moshe, where it describes the death of Moshe. So Moshe could not have written it. Even though there's another opinion of Gra that says that those last Psukim were written by Moshe Bidema. There's an opinion in the Gemara, he wrote them Bidema. Bidema can mean either with tears. In other words, God is dictating to him about his death and he has to write it into Torah. But others will say Bidema means that he wrote the letters, but they were all mixed up, scrambled. And only later were they unscrambled to describe the death of Moshe. The problem, yes?
Same problem.
She was going to say it. Very good. Yes. The death of Yeshua and his burial appears in the end of Sefer Yeshua, chapter 24. So the next line. The Gemara goes on to say, I mean, you're tremendous today. You are anticipating everything. But it says, Vayomot Yehoshua bin Nun, Eved Hashem. Yehoshua bin Nun, the servant of God, died. So the Gemara answers, the Aske Pinchas. Pinchas is the one who wrote the last few psukim of Sefer Yehoshua. All right? Shmuel wrote Sifro, Sefer Shmuel, and here we're going to have the same problem again, because it talks about the death of Shmuel. So we're going to see in a moment, now you don't have to anticipate the question, it's all there. Shmuel wrote his Sefer, he wrote Sefer Shoftim. The one that we're going to begin was written by Shmuel, and he also wrote Sefer Rut. He wrote Sefer Rut. Now Rut was an extremely important sefer for him to write. In a sense, Rut can be considered one of the first books of responsa literature. You see, what is the book of Rut about? There are many great ideas that emerge out of the book of Rut. But in the final analysis, what does Rut end with? The marriage of Boaz. The ancestry of David. Boaz marries Ruth. They have a child, Oved. And Oved begat Yishai. And Yishai begat David. So the really the purpose of Sefer Rut, the book of Rut, is the ancestry of David. And the reason why this was written by Shmuel, because there were those who wanted to undermine the leadership of David by the ultimate character assassination of all, that those who called him king, so they said, it's not a question of whether he's king or not, the question is he Jewish or not? The Savta was a Moabite woman. The Savta was a Moabite woman. So how is he Jewish? So Torah Sheba Al-Peh tells us, in Torah Shebichtav, in the written Torah, it says, Lo Yovo Amoni Umoavi B'Kahal Hashem, one from Ammon and Moab shall not come in the congregation of God. From which Torah Sheba Al-Peh, or which Torah that was given to Moshe at Sinai, the oral law says that it only applies to the males of Ammon and Moab, that they were kept out of entry into the Jewish people. But the females, Ammoni V'lo Ammonit, Moavi v'lo Moavid, and the reason for this is in Torah it says why lo yavo Ammoni u'Moavi, why shall Ammoni and Moavi not become part of Kehal Hashem, the congregation of God, al dvar asher lo kidmu etchem balechem u'bamayim b'tzeitchem in Mitzrayim. When Jews went through Ammon and Moab, they did not come out and give them bread and water. Here we're talking about cousins. I mean, they were mishpucha. Who saved Lot, the father of Ammon and Moab? Who took care of Lot? Who kept him under his wing all the time? Was Avram. And here the mishpucha is going through Ammon and Moab, and there was no reception worthy of any note. On the contrary, it was a reception of enmity and anger. So the Gemara says, who are the ones that would go out to meet an army that is marching through? It's Darko Shel Ish. Men go out to meet an army that is passing through, not the women. Now, and more than that, Sefer Rut wants to point out that the women of Ammon and Moab may very well be Gomlei Chesed, kind. The whole Sefer of Rut is the Sefer of Gemilat Chesed, the Sefer of kindness. And Boaz tells Ruth what great kindness she has done for him. That's the whole thing. And the kindness of Ruth that she does not leave Naomi, but continues on with Naomi back to Eretz Yisrael, to a strange and a foreign land. So this is the book of Ruth. So Shmuel was the one who had anointed David as king over Israel. Anointing of David means not only David, but it means the beginning of an eternal dynasty. And we're talking about a dynasty that is ultimately going to bring Mashiach. If there would remain a question as to the legitimacy of David HaMelech, it would mean, at the end of history, the legitimacy of Mashiach. What do you mean we want Mashiach now? Mashiach may not even be Jewish. So in order for Shmuel to come to the defense of David and make it very, very clear that David is a good Jew, he wrote Sefer Rut. So in that sense, it was the answer, the response. There was a shaila. Is David a kosher Jew or not? So the book of Rut came to establish the lineage of David, in order to make it very clear for all time that he was the legitimate son of a woman who had gone through a proper process of conversion. The halachas of conversion, the laws of conversion, we learn from Sefer Rut as well. What is it that Rut says to her mother-in-law? Your people are my people, your God is my God. Whither you go, I shall go. Bashet Olini Olin, where you will stay overnight, there I will stay overnight. And from this, the Gemara learns all of the laws of Gehud. What it is that the convert has to accept upon himself. So the purpose, therefore, of Sefer Rut, written by Shmuel, was to establish that Rut was a convert, a proper convert to Judaism, and therefore David is a valid, as a Jew, and king of Israel. The Gemara goes on to say the question that we've already anticipated, but it says in Shmuel, U Shmuel mate Vayishvedu lo kol Yisrael vayikberu berama ubeiro Shmuel died, and they all of Israel mourned him and they buried him berama ubeiro. Eich yitochen, how is it possible Shmuel katav sefer Shmuel im mituar bo moto, if the death of Shmuel is described in Shmuel, so how can he have written sefer Shmuel? So Gemara here it's the same thing. The aske God hachozeh v'natan anavi. God HaChozeh and Natan HaNavi, who are two of the prophets that are mentioned in Sefer Shmuel at the time of David, they are the ones who completed the Sefer. Aske is Aramaic, to complete. It can also mean to raise. By completing something, you raise it. And what word do we have in Hebrew that comes from that? From Aske. Echom nim helicopter. A masok. A helicopter is a masok. It comes from the word Aske. Aske means to rise. The completion of a sefer, in a sense, is the sefer rising. So the name masok, because the masok rises, right? Goes straight up. Because the completion of a sefer is raising the sefer. An incomplete sefer is not a sefer that has reached the level that it can. When it is completed, it has reached its level. Yes. He's mentioned in Sefer Shmuel. That's a very good question. Very good question. She asks, why is one called a Chose and one called a Navi? Incidentally, we're also going to find when we come into Sefer Shmuel, the first time Shmuel is mentioned, he is referred to as the Ro'eh. The seer. With an Aleph. Moshe is a Ro'eh with an ayin the first time we come across. But Shmuel is a Ro'eh. When Shaul has three donkeys are lost, so he goes out to seek the donkeys throughout all. He searches for them in the land of Binyamin. And finally, when they reach the point where they feel that the father at home is not worrying about the donkeys anymore, but he's worrying about Shaul, so on the way home, his servant says, let's stop and ask the seer, the Ro'eh. And they came into the city, and who happens to be at the gate of the city? Shmuel. And they ask him, where is the Ro'eh, the seer? And Shmuel says, Ani HaRo'eh, I am the seer. So, I haven't answered your question. All I did was I attempted to confuse you, so that you may forget the question. obviously, we're talking about there are different levels of seeing, and different words are going to be used to describe different visions. For example, at the beginning of Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu begins with Chazon Yeshayahu ben Amoz, the Chazon, the vision. The word Chazon is usually used when we are talking about something that is going to describe suffering and punishment. Nevuah can encompass all sorts of visions. Chizayon is of one sort. And I believe when they use Ro'eh with regard to Shmuel, Ro'eh is used with respect to things that are not necessarily earth-shattering. In other words, he's able to see where the donkeys are. Huh? Or just seeing, in other words, there's a difference between, seeing seems to be used on a... on a less esoteric level, when we're talking about, you know, even Bilam is referred to as one who sees. So it depends on what the prophecy is all about. This is what it's going to depend. There are about 10 different terms that are used to describe prophecy. As we go through Nevi'im, you'll see the different uses and what they refer to. Okay, so we have Sefer, what Shmuel wrote. David, Katav Sefer Tehillim, Al Yedei Asara Zekenim. David wrote Sefer Tehillim Al Yitei Asara Zakenim means that in Tehillim there are chapters that were written by 10 other elders throughout time, and they were incorporated into the Sefer of Tehillim. Yes? Yes, Tefillah LeMoshe. But there are Adam HaRishon, Malki Tzedek. We're going to see that there's a kapitel in Tehillim that was written by Malki Tzedek. Avram, Moshe, Haman, Yedutun, Asaf, the three sons of Korah. And there are different Brakim in Tehillim that begin, and they say that this was Al Yedei Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu wrote Sefer Yirmiyahu and Sefer Malachim and Kinot, which is Eicha. All of Sefer Yirmiyahu, Malachim, he wrote the history of that period. Just as Shmuel, of course, in writing Sefer Shoftim, he is writing the history of the 300 years, nearly 300 years that preceded Shmuel. And remember, the beginning of Ruth is Vayehi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim. Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, in the days that the judges judged. So now Shmuel, who was the completion, who ended the period of Shoftim, and he is the great colossus who bridges between the period of the Shoftim to the period of the kings and the Nevi'im, he is the one who wrote Sefer Shoftim, all of us. Okay. Yirmiyahu, so now we have Yirmiyahu. Chizkiyahu v'siyato katvu Yishayahu Mishlei Shirashirim v'kohelet. Chizkiyahu and King Chizkiyahu and his Bet Din and his court. Huh? Oh wait, we're coming. We're coming. Aha! Let's read the medrash that comes. Now, when it says that they wrote Yishayahu, what does it mean that they wrote Yishayahu? Yishayahu said Yishayahu. What it means is they were the ones, there were all sorts of prophecies that were said by Yishayahu. They brought it all together and they wrote them down. In other words, as they were heard, as the Nevuot was said by Yishayahu, he didn't write them himself. They were put together in writing, or he may have written them in different at different times. Yishayahu said prophecy in a period of over 90 years. 90 years he said the Nevuah. So here there were different prophecies he said at different times, but probably they were written at the time either by Yishayahu or by people who heard them, but then to be put into a sefer, and the way the sefer is organized, that's also extremely important. There are all sorts of fascinating things in Yishayahu, where the beginning of Yishayahu's prophecy is really in chapter 6, though it begins with 5 chapters before. There are all sorts of very fascinating things on how the sefer is written, how it was laid out. That was done by Chizkiyahu v'siyato. Now, Mishlei Shirashirim and Kohelet, that we know Shlomo HaMelech to be author of it. It's true, we're going to see it in a moment. Of course Shlomo HaMelech is the author. The only thing is, Shlomo HaMelech, in Malachim, it says that he said over 3,000 shir, songs and poems, and 3,000 mishalim and more. They chose part of those writings and made them Kitvei HaKodesh. They put it together. We have over here the Medrash Rabba Omer Rav Yudin. Minayin Ata Omer Shekol Mi Sheomer Divrei Torah Berabin Zoche Shetishre Ruach HaKodesh Alav. How do we know that somebody who teaches Torah in public, who teaches Torah to the public, can be worthy that the divine presence shall rest upon him? We learned this from Shlomo. Shayidei Sheomer Divrei Torah Berabin, because he said words of Torah in public, he became worthy Shesharta Alav Ruach HaKodesh, that Ruach HaKodesh should, the divine presence should descend upon him, and he said three svarim, Mishlei, Kohelet, and Shir HaShirim. So of course Shlomo said it, but the ones who composed it, put it together, and made it as part of the Kitvei HaKodesh, that was Chizkiyahu Ubeit Dino. And of course there are different opinion as to when he wrote the Svarim, there is one opinion that says that the Shir HaShirim was written first, Mishlei second, and Kohelet third, because in one's youth one sings of love, which is Shir HaShirim. One gets into middle age, one becomes a little wise and writes Mishlei, and then toward the end of life one begins to see everything as Havel, Havolin, Hakol, Hevel, and then he wrote Shir HaShirim, even though one has to know that there are other opinions. Because it would seem to leave the impression as though Shlomo, who was a Chacham Mikol Adam, had to wait for the end of life in order to see that so much of what happens in life is Havel Havolam and it's nonsense. That would really be in direct contradiction to the fact that God clearly blesses him with wisdom that is greater than any living person. So what everybody knows everybody knows Shir HaShirim in youth and Mishlei in middle age and Kohelet to the end of life. The Chochmah of Shlomo was that he may very well have said them in an opposite order. He knew it all, and at the end of life he was still able to say Shir HaShirim. All right, Anshei Knesset Hagdola. And Rashi says, who are the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah? Now we are talking already after Churban Bet HaMikdash, Gola, the Babel, Jews have come back to Eretz Yisrael. The ones who lead the Jewish people are the men of the Great Assembly, and amongst them are Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Zerubbabel, Mordechai and the Chavireim and their friends. They were the men of the Great Assembly. They wrote Sefer Yecheskel. Remember, all of Yecheskel was said while Yecheskel was in Babel. The only Sefer that, for all intents and purposes, a Sefer of Nevuah, what was written outside of Eretz Yisrael, was Yecheskel. And the only reason why Yecheskel was able to see prophecy in Chutz Laaretz is because he was already a prophet in Eretz Yisrael before he went into the exile, and all of his prophecies were about Eretz Yisrael. So it was finally written down by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Ushnei Masar, they put together the 12 minor prophets, Daniel and Megillat Esther. Megillat Esther were written, all of these were written by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Ezra Katav Sifro, V'yachas Shel Divrei Hayamin. Ezra wrote Sefer Ezra. He also wrote Yachas Shel Divrei Hayom. In Divrei Hayomim, we have a history of the Jewish people, really a history of the world, starting from the very beginning all the way down till Ezra and beyond, a little bit beyond Ezra. So therefore, Gemara says Ezra wrote his own Sefer, and the Yachas, all of the families in Divrei Hayom, ad lo, until himself, until he arrives at himself. Ad Sheyiches Atzma, Rashi says. Uman Asker, and of course here we have the same question, who completed the rest of the Re'amin? Misimo, who ended it? Nechemia ben Chakaya is the one who finished Sefer Re'amin. So here we have all of the Sifrei HaTanach and who wrote them. So in total they are 24. Just another few words about something that we had said earlier, and this I come back to every so often, and that is the non-Jewish impact and influence on Tanakh. In what we were learning now, in a number of areas, the fact that there is a book of Nehemiah, this is not from Jewish sources. On the contrary, the Gemara makes it very clear that it's all called Sefer Ezra. And of course, as we said, Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Bet, and Malachim Aleph and Malachim Bet, and Divrei Hayamim Aleph and Divrei Hayamim Bet, which leads us also to something further. And I believe that there are different times at which we pointed this out. The Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim, as they were given to us, have certain divisions. For example, let's take Torah. In Torah, there are no ends of sentences. If you've ever looked into a Sefer Torah, there's no such thing as a period or a comma or the end of a sentence. There are the ends of paragraphs. And paragraphs can be very long, or they can be very, very short. Very long or very short. What differentiates, what separates one paragraph from another? So there are two kinds of parashiyot in Torah. One is parasha pitucha. Parasha pitucha means that the sentence ends, and until the end of the sentence, everything is left without any writing. The next sentence begins on the next line. That's an open parasha where we see a pay written in our Chumash. That's an indication that in the Sefer Torah, the rest of the line is going to remain open. When you see a Samach in the Chumash, that means the parasha is stuma, closed, which means that we leave a space in the Sefer Torah, a space where nine letters could have been written, and the next paragraph begins on the same line. So it's closed within the line. The only other divisions that we have in Torah are between one Chumash and the next. Four lines are left open, nothing written. We don't have sentences. We don't even have, you know, the Sheni, Shlishi, the Ve'i. We don't have differences between one Sedra or to the next. None of those divisions exist. One thing is certain. The division of Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim into chapters, everything is in chapters and verse, this is all Catholic. It's not part of, does not come from Jewish sources. Yes? Yeah. Incidentally, I don't know why you ask it Hertz, you can ask it about Hirsch, you can ask it about every Gemara and every Sefer that we have. How in the Gemara, when the Gemara cites a Pasuk, on the side of the Gemara we're told where the Pasuk is, it's always Perek. And I know whenever I talk about this, whenever I mention this, people become incensed. How did we permit such an invasion and an assault by the Catholic Church onto the Sefer HaSvachim? Everybody becomes indignant. The only thing is like this. It made the Tanakh so much more accessible and easy to refer to. Now, why did they need to be able to refer to chapter and verse?
Because it gets the chapter broken down so that they can refute Judaism and build a new religion.
Precisely.
Had
to
know how to put it into their terms, so the rest of the women said, we'll leave it that way so we know what they're referring to.
A good point. In order to be able to refute Tanakh, in order to be able to debate with Jews on matters of Tanakh, so they had to be able to cite indeed chapter and verse, so they divided it into chapter and verse. And we have to be able to respond to chapter and verse. And the fact is that it made it more accessible and easy for us. Otherwise, Shmuel would be one big sefer. How would I tell somebody where a pasuk was? There was, of course, a period of time in Judaism where you didn't have to tell anybody where a pasuk was, because everybody knew where the pasuk was. Everybody knew Tanakh. A child didn't go on to Mishnah until he knew Tanakh. Yes? They didn't put the Masoretic text, the Masorah. The Masorah really is something that was transmitted orally for many years. Then it was written down. Now what the Masorah says, and maybe that's something that one of these days I should show you as well, what the Masorah is. Very few people are really aware of what the Masorah is. The Masorah was a very unique system before the age of the computer, where they had down pat precisely how every word in all of Tanakh is to be spelled, how it is to be enunciated. A very fascinating system. We did make reference in passing to it when we talked about the name Yerushalayim. The name Yerushalayim. How many times does Yerushalayim appear in Tanakh? 666
seven. I think it was 667. And of the 667, it always appears without a yud between the lamed and the mem, except how many times? Five times. And I had quoted then the Ibn Ezra, who says, in other words, there are five out of 667 times that Yerushalayim appears to Tanakh, only five times that there is a yud between the lamed and the mem. And the Ibn Ezra says, from this you can see the precision with which the Masorah was transmitted from generation to generation. They knew precisely how to spell every word in Tanakh. And he uses Yerushalayim as the proof that in all places except five, it's written without a yud. And at least let me repeat what I think was my fine addition to what the Ibn Ezra said. Ki mitzion teitze Torah utevar Hashem miYerushalayim. The proof of the word of God comes from the name Yerushalayim. How carefully the name Yerushalayim was watched and guarded throughout Tanakh. Yes?
Oh boy,
I was careful. She asked a good question. I like the question because I have an answer. That's why I like it. I said that Yechezkel was the only sefer of Nevuah, and you asked the question correctly. The only sefer Nevuah that was written in Chutz La'aretz. The Debbie asked, well, wait a minute, Daniel was also written in Chutz La'aretz. The difference is the following. The Gemara says, Daniel was not a Navi. Daniel had Ruach HaKodesh, but not prophecy. Yechezkel was a prophet, Daniel was not a prophet. And it's a completely different level of knowledge. And therefore, remember, in the listings that we had before, we had a listing for Nevi'im, and we had a listing for Ketuvim, the writings. The difference between Ketuvim and Nevi'im is that Nevi'im is indeed prophecy. Prophecy means that God dictates word for word. The Ketuvim are something that is written under the influence of Ruach HaKodesh. Completely different level. Different level. Yes.
Punctuation and the division and was it done at one time or was it evolving? I mean, if the Tanakh consisted of 24 Megillot, they were punctuated and separated and divided into Sukkim.
All of that we knew from the very beginning, from the time each Sefer was given to us.
I mean, the Catholic Church
did nothing with regard to that.
This work of
all they did was divide it into the chapters.
I know it.
Nothing else.
Not into the psukim?
No. Just they the numbered the psukim, but we knew.
Well, all right.
We knew where a pasuk ended.
And the Sheni, Shlishi,
Revi,
and so on.
Sheni, Shlishi, and Revi, or for that matter, even the divisions into Parshiot, Bereshit, Noach, Lech Lecha. This came sometime during the period that Jews were in Babel, when the cycle of reading the Torah according to Parshiot was developed. That evolved during the period of Babel. But yes.
The other question is: at what time those Nevi'im and Ketuvim Svarim were incorporated into what we consider the 24 books? There must have been discussions which books to include and which to exclude.
And there are a number of places, for example, the Gemara says that they wanted to ban the book of Yechezkel. Or, let me not use the word ban, lignos Sefer Yechezkel. The Gemara says that they wanted to hide. Now, it should not be part of the Kitvei HaKodesh. Why, the Gemara says? Because there are psukim in Yechezkel that seem to be in direct contradiction to psukim in Torah. So the Gemara tells us about one of the Tanoim who went up into an attic with 400 barrels of oil. In other words, the oil, his lamp was lit late into the night, and when he came down from the being in hiding over there, he was able to resolve all of the differences between Sefer Yechezkel and Torah.
The only thing is, the Gemara only has two or three psukim that are reconciled, because the last part of Sefer Yecheskel deals with temple service at the time of the third, when the third Beth Hamikdash is going to be built, and also the plans for the third Beth Hamikdash. And there are psukim there that are very difficult. We have to know how to explain them. Yes, and Kohelet, a number. So in other words, the decisions were ultimately made by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Just another word about the chapter divisions. The fact is that the chapter divisions did create a number of problems that people are not aware of. First of all, the chapter divisions did inject into Torah Catholic ideology. There are places where one can sense it. Huh? Not necessarily where we wouldn't have stopped. There is one place where we wouldn't have made any... There is no stop whatsoever. And I'll come to that in a moment. But there are places where I'll give you an example so you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Where does the first Aliyah in Torah... At the beginning of Bereshis, the first person who gets an Aliyah reads from the beginning of Bereshis until after Vayechulu. Chapter 2 in Bereshit begins before Vayechulu, in order to leave the impression that Saturday is Sunday. If we would have Shabbos coming right after the 6 days, it would leave the impression quite clearly that Shabbos is day 7 of the week. But in order to differentiate themselves from Judaism, they turn Sunday into Shabbos. So how did they inject this idea into Torah by ending? Take a look, where does chapter 1 end? Where does chapter 2 begin? And after that, you're going to tell me where chapter 3 begins. Chapter 2, Pasuk 1 is Vayechulu. So to the unsuspecting, what's happened over here is the end of creation is the beginning of a new week. In other words, just to separate it as much as you can from the direct flow of the 6 days. Now, chapter 3 begins where? And take a look in your Tanakh. V'hanachash haya adrum, and the snake was wiser or subtler than all of the other. Now, in the Masorah, there is nothing to set off that pasuk. There's no Parsha Ptucha, there's no Parsha Stuma, there's no Sheni, Shlishi, Revi, nothing. But as far as Christianity was concerned, this became the basic and fundamental principle of all of Catholicism and Christianity, the fall of man. Man falls because of first sin. And as a result of first sin, man forever is born black with sin, and there's only one way for salvation, and that is to believe in him. So therefore, the Hanochosh Hoya Orum is fundamental to all of Christianity. So they set it off separately at the beginning of a chapter. And I'll tell you how it even made its way into, in a sense, into Halacha. There's a Halacha that says that from Rosh Hashanah, during the month of Elul, from the beginning of the month of Elul until Rosh Hashanah, you should say Tilim twice. Why should you say Tilim twice? Because there are 150 kapitlach in Tehillim. 2 times 150 equals 300. 300 is the gematria of the word kaper. Kaper, forgive, atone. A chof is 20, a pei is 80. 80 and 20 equals 100, plus resh is 200, 300. The only thing is, according to the Masorah, there are 147 chapters in Tehillim, not 150. There's a whole Gemara at the beginning of Masechet Brachos that says that chapters 1 and 2 are one chapter. There are other chapters, but we have a total of 147. But they came up with a gematria based on 150. Incidentally, you're going to get very very upset if you have to stop noticing it afterwards. If you look in a chumash at the end of every chumash, at the end of Breishis, at the end of Shmos. So in most of our Chumashim we'll have the number of Psukim in Sefer Breishis as such and such, and then they bring a Pasuk that adds up to that number. The number of Parshiot, Ptucha, Ustuma, and then they say Uprokov, and the chapters are so many and so many. I think in Bereshit, I don't remember the pasuk, like, but the prokem are so many and so many, and then they bring a pasuk, which is an indication of the number of chapters. How do you bring a pasuk for chapters that are Catholic? There are other problems. For example, there's a halacha with regard to the reading of Megillat Esther, that the person who reads the Megillah is supposed to raise his voice at the beginning of every chapter. If somebody doesn't know the halacha or what the Masorah is, so one assumes Megillat Esther is broken into 10 chapters. But there are those 10 chapters that we have in our Megillat Esther are not Jewish chapters. All of Sefer Megillat Esther, I believe, is broken into 4 or 5 parashiyot. And at those parashiyot of Ptucha Ustuma, in the Megillah itself, right? You can't count the ten chapters. There are a lot of other. When you become sensitized, and I think we've done that already. So first of all, you have to remember one thing: many of the chapter divisions, say, throughout Torah, many of the chapter divisions are quite harmless. In other words, one need not look at every chapter division as though, oh, here it is, they're pulling another one over on us. Many of the chapter divisions are very harmless, and what they really their real purpose is to make Tanakh more easily accessible and quotable. And the truth is, it was so good, and that's why we use it. That's why we use it. I'm certain that one of the first things Mashiach is going to do is going to make a completely different set of chapter divisions. Incidentally, if you have the Koren Chumash, which was the Koren Tanakh, which was printed in Yerushalayim, on one side of the page they have the chapter divisions as we know them, and on the other side they have begun using a different form of chapterization, if there is a word like that, in the hope that someday that will be used. In other words, they made divisions that are of that have come from a Yerushalmi source. There are a number of other very fascinating things with regard to it, but you may find there are different places where I myself have found places where you can see the Christian influence dripping in Tanakh in a number of places. As we come to them, I will I don't know why the last chapter of Hosea, I will talk about that. Next week in Yes Hashem, I know that I gave you homework, the Shira. We're going to begin with Devorah. So I want you to go through chapters 4 and 5. And we're going to have to spend about a half an hour, I'd say, on an understanding why the Shoftim were called Shoftim. That's very, very important. The truth is, there should be a whole series of lectures on that. But we want to go through Tanakh. Why were they called Shoftim?